It's been called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Some 200,000 people have already died, and up to 2.5 million more are now on the move, fleeing from murderous raids on their villages. Most of them survive under plastic sheets in cramped and squalid camps, totally dependent on whatever handouts they receive from aid agencies in the region. The conflict in Darfur, a huge arid region in western Sudan, erupted in 2003 when rebel African groups began attacking government targets, and the authorities in Khartoum responded with a brutal crackdown, sending in feared Arab Janjaweed militias to slaughter, rape and burn whole villages.
People who have fled their villages did so, you know, in murderous, horrible conditions where militias rode into their villages at night, burned, looted, stole, raped.
Simon Crittle is spokesman for the World Food Programme in Sudan. He's just back from a visit to Gereda Camp in Darfur, the world's largest camp for internally displaced people, where conditions, he says, are becoming increasingly desperate.
They're living under plastic tarpaulins. They don't have as much to eat as they would like. They don't have basic things like electricity and clean water. Disease is very, very high in the camps. Things like malaria, cholera, malnutrition are very high. I spoke to one woman who told me that she'd been there for 3 years. She was sitting around. She had nothing to do. In the meantime, some of her children had died of disease. And they really, you know, the hope for these people is really running out. They see very, very little in the way of conflict resolution on the horizon.
And women are reported to be particularly at risk from violence both in and outside the camps. Have you found this too?
Absolutely, absolutely. In Gereda, when I was there, I went to a local hospital and I spoke to some of the patients and I spoke to some of the doctors. The doctor there told me that every couple of days a woman is brought in who is the victim of sexual assault. We've all heard the stories about when women have to leave the camps to collect firewood, how they're very, very vulnerable and they're often attacked. What we're very concerned about at WFP is that if we're not able to reach hundreds of thousands of people as we can't now, that it won't just be women leaving the camps, it will be a lot of people in search of alternative sources of food. And when they do that, when they leave the camps, they're very, very vulnerable to attack. Kofi Annan said that we could be looking at another Rwandan-type situation. So we're extremely concerned about the future of these people.
Earlier this year, as international pressure mounted on the Sudanese government to stop the killing, the African Union mediated a peace deal signed in May this year. But only one rebel faction signed the accord, and aid workers say the violence has actually increased since then. Since the Sudanese government will not allow a United Nations force into the region, African Union peacekeepers this past week extended their mandate until the end of the year and are due to receive financial and logistical support from Western countries. So does this mean things will get better for the millions of internally displaced people or IDPs? Or is there still a real threat that the lack of security means many aid agencies may be forced to pull out of the region?
I think if you'd asked me that question a week or so ago, I would have said there was a very high risk of pullout. And that was before the decision about the continued presence of an AU peace force.
Anne Masterson directs a joint ecumenical aid program in Darfur run by the Caritas Confederation and by the Global Alliance Action by Churches Together.
I think the biggest problem in Darfur is security, and there is a need to keep a peace force present. And that force has to be, you know, resourced and equipped and have enough soldiers to allow it to be effective. I think in recent weeks, the lack of clarity of whether the AU would continue or not meant the situation deteriorated a lot. And we had increased banditry on the roads. We had attacks on our vehicles. We had robberies. We had staff beaten up. Even in one or two of the IDP camps, we were unable to go into work because of the IDP's anger at the peace process, the DPA, which is the peace agreement. So we did have a lot of incidences in the last few months. I think the decision just under a week ago to allow the AU to continue at least to December has helped the situation. It obviously hasn't resolved it because we still have a lot of clarity as to what this force will represent, what will its resources be. And again, we will face a similar problem in December. So I think the main issue underpinning any insecurity is the lack of an effective peace force. Whether that's AU or UN is another question.
But with the larger and better equipped AU force, are you hopeful the situation can actually improve, that things can get better for people on the ground there?
I think it can improve in that we will be able to get access to people and so provide assistance where and when necessary. But I don't think that will solve the whole problem. I think the peace process and the political process to promote a peace, an acceptable peace, is essential to continue. The peace agreement that was signed, as many know, a large group of the population, particularly the IDPs, do not support it and feel that it doesn't represent their views and opinions. I think there needs to be an openness to open up the dialogue to those groups who did not sign so that we get a broader discussion, a more open, you know, discussion on a peace process and a future for many of these people. So unless that is going on parallel, and obviously that's not the role of us as this agency on the ground, but that needs to happen at other levels.
This has been called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Can you just tell us a little bit about the situation there on the ground? How serious and how difficult life is for the people, particularly the IDPs in these camps?
I mean, the IDPs, many of them will have been there since 2004. These camps are very restricted. They're not allowed, they're very much on a temporary basis, so they're not allowed to produce, they don't have land to produce their own food. They don't have access to income, so they're very much reliant on aid, food and resources. So especially we've just now towards the end of a very long rain season, and so of course these people are living under plastic sheeting in these conditions. I think the other more serious issue many is their own security. None of them feel secure enough to go back to their homes. Even though some of them may be from areas very close to the IDP camps, they cannot go back even to farm their lands. So I think besides the millions who have been displaced already, we're seeing others, new displacements. We're also seeing IDP camps where people are feeling insecure and are breaking up and are moving to other locations. And we are seeing some IDP camps which have around them are hostile forces around them who attack them when they go for firewood, attack them when they're outside. So it's a very insecure environment, and it's also an environment that is not allowed to be any way improved because it's required by the authorities here that the camps are temporary.
You're talking about the lack of security for people, and women are particularly at risk, particularly vulnerable in this situation, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, Darfur is not yet another example of using violence towards women as a weapon. And we have seen cases of this, and obviously we have many women who have been traumatized by this. They are particularly vulnerable as they go for water and firewood. And in fact, patrols have been set up in the past to protect them with AU forces to move with them. This is happening effectively in some areas, maybe not as effectively in other areas because of the lack of numbers of forces on the ground, but also that the AU has had a difficult period recently and its acceptance by the IDPs has decreased.
These are long-term issues for people there, aren't they? Even if a peace solution is found, these are problems that are going to go on for a long time into the future. Are you trying to address, as you say, the camps are temporary structures, but are you trying to address some of the longer-term issues for these people?
We are obviously trying, when we work also with host communities, we are trying to also help them, because obviously it's not just the IDPs who are poor, there are people around. Darfur was a very disadvantaged area. So we are trying also to build up structures in some of the host communities so that when the IDPs return, they have something to return to. We also would hope that if a process of more security could be attained, then we could also, as within the Caritas network or maybe through individual members, to assist them to return home and to rebuild their lives. But this is difficult for the IDPs in the current situation, which is so unclear. But obviously that is the future. The future is that if we can have a stable and peaceful environment to allow them to go home and to rebuild, and there will be huge needs to help them to do that because many of their villages have been destroyed. That's originally why they were displaced. They were burnt out of their villages. And, of course, the land has not been utilized for some years, so there will be much work to do to re-establish, you know, their their livelihood and their security when they go back.
A lot of international attention to this crisis. The conflict first broke out back in 2003, and yet it seems hard to see any kind of imminent solution on the horizon. It must be very difficult to keep hope up in this kind of situation.
I think it is, but on the other hand, when you live here day to day, you know, even though, you know, we have faced difficulties in the last month, particularly attack on vehicles and difficulties for staff, you still see that the team of people working here, and particularly the Sudanese and our national partners who we work with, are all very committed to continuing to assist people. And I think when you see that in the national population and your staff here, that encourages you to know that there has to be a solution. You know, you can't give up on these situations. You just have to hope that with enough effort from both, you know, not just ourselves here on the ground, but by those who have responsibility to make sure that peace is established, that efforts will be made. And I think you never give up when you see the commitment of the people around you to assisting their own people. And also the strength and the strength of the Darfur people, and particularly the IDPs in living their lives in these very restricted environments, but from continuing, you know, we have worked with women who have lost their husbands, who have lost their children, and yet are still struggling day to day to keep the remainder of the family together, who also are encouraging their children to attend the schools that we try to operate in IDP camps with other NGOs to get their children educated in the hope that there will be a future and a change.
And finally, what can ordinary people here in the West do really to support the vital work that you're doing out there in Darfur?
I mean, I must say, we in this particular unique network of actions, that we have received a lot of support from people, and we continue to, and we must, you know that we must be very thankful to the population here for. But obviously, we need this to continue. As you said earlier, this situation is not going to be resolved in a month or 2 months. It's certainly a longer term issue, and we need that continued commitment to allow us to continue to operate the clinics, to assist schools, to assist with food and shelter while this bigger issue is being resolved. And we would ask them to continue to give us that commitment and to continue to support the people of Darfur, because at least if we can be present and continue to assist some extent, that demonstrates to them that the outside world hasn't forgotten about them, and they're not a forgotten people, and that also that there's a commitment from the West of the world. And I think particularly, as you're aware, Darfur is a predominantly Muslim environment. And in the present world, it's important that this is a demonstration of a predominantly Christian humanitarian network supporting its Muslim brothers and sisters. And I think that's also quite an important demonstration.
Anne Masterson heads a joint ecumenical aid program in Darfur run by the Caritas Confederation and by the Global Alliance Action by Churches Together. And earlier you heard Simon Crittle, spokesman for the World Food Program in Sudan.